disruption zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
The Disruption Zone. I thought I'd bring Congressman Thomas Massie on. I've gotten a lot of questions. I get a lot of texts, a lot of tweets, a lot of Facebook comments saying, why did Congressman Massie, at least as the mainstream media painted it, hold up the $2 trillion stimulus bill? Well, I thought the best thing to do was to ask him in person rather than try to answer for him. So welcome back to the Disruption Zone, Congressman Massie. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I mean, your show's called The Disruption Zone. I guess you've got the right guest on today.
A bit of a disruptor. But,
yeah. Well, you know, I just disrupt them when they try to subvert the Constitution. And, you know, the question that you've been getting in your tweets and your texts is actually based on a false narrative that the media put out there. Why is Congressman Massie holding up this bill? You know, the bill signing happened right on time. I didn't hold it up a bit.
Right.
But that's what the leadership was trying to say. So let's just back up. Nancy Pelosi and Kevin McCarthy want to get reelected as the respective leaders, not respected, but respective leaders of their parties. And to do so, they have to be paternalistic or maternalistic. They're going to protect their incumbents from primary challengers. Like that's part of the incumbent protection package that they offer. Mm-hmm. If you join the herd, and part of protecting incumbents is making sure that they don't go on the record for tough votes.
Right.
And the problem that I had is I watched the Senate pass this 96-0. By the way, Rand Paul and Mike Lee are self-quarantined.
Right.
The vote might have been different. I don't want to say that it would have or would not have, but it might have been different in the Senate. But my point is 96 out of 100 senators made it to work. And what Pelosi had in mind was that everybody could stay home and that she would just do it herself. And so the first plan was to pass it on unanimous consent and leave everybody at the House. And then they said, well, no, this is a big bill. This deserves a voice vote.
Okay.
By the way, there's a difference. The voice vote involves actually introducing the bill and having a little bit of a debate.
Okay.
So that's what they switched to. But they were still telling people, don't come to work. Just stay home. And here's my problem with that. Article 1, Section 5 of the Constitution says that you have to have a quorum, and it defines a quorum as half of the body, in order to do business in the House and the Senate. And here we are in the House. They were conspiring. I say conspiring because they know it's unconstitutional. They were conspiring to pass a bill without a quorum. Why is that a problem? Because Nancy Pelosi has promised that this bill is just a down payment. Do we want to get in the habit? Do we want to set a precedent that everybody in Congress stays home and Nancy Pelosi passes the bills without us there?
So,
in an unconstitutional fashion? I don't think so.
To clarify, they shifted it to a voice vote, which required a quorum, but they weren't asking the quorum to show up?
Correct. So they were saying, we'll do a voice vote. By the way, it always requires a quorum, whether it's unanimous consent or a voice vote or a recorded vote. You have to have a quorum. The Constitution doesn't get into things like unanimous consent or that sort of thing. But it does talk about recorded votes. So you always have to have a quorum to do business.
Right. So the idea was that they would do a bill and just be like, everybody consents, but nobody is showing up. So in
right.
essence, by not showing up, it was a form of saying, I consent. I mean, that's...
I guess if they give you enough time, the other thing they could do is not even tell you when it was going to be or not give you enough advance notice. and then you wouldn't even be able to be there. You can't register your objection via phone. You have to be in person to do that. But yeah, it, basically, that's the gist of it. So they were saying, they put out this narrative, back to the original question, which is framed a little bit incorrectly based on the false media narrative. They were saying that if I, on Friday, which was when the bill passed, when they planned to pass it, if on Friday I stood up and objected and required a recorded vote, that there wouldn't be enough people there.
Right.
They wouldn't have a quorum, and that they would have to take 24 hours to assemble Congress, and that would push it into Saturday.
Right.
Well, the problem with that narrative is I was telling everybody about my plans on Thursday morning.
Right.
And I'm reading the emails. They're telling people not to come to work. I got a hold of my own leadership. Like, I rarely transmit my intentions to the Republican whip team.
Right.
Because they almost always use it against you if they have something bad planned.
Right.
And in this case, they did. They did use it against me. But I did it because it was a responsible thing to do in this case.
Right.
They went out and made sure that I was vilified in the media. Well, and so what I told them was, like, I said, invite people to work. Tell them there is going to be a vote. Tell them I will do it. I am going to request the vote. So tell them here 24 hours in advance that they need to be here on Friday. And that's what happened.
Right.
People came to Congress. By the way, these congressmen were saying, oh, we don't want to expose ourselves to the virus by traveling or by going to work. The problem with that is they're telling the truckers to keep trucking. They're telling the farmers to keep farming. They're telling the grocery store baggers to keep bagging. But they don't want to follow the Constitution when their job calls for it. The congressmen don't. I think that's a little arrogant of them on their part.
So
I called them out for it, and that's why I was the most hated man in Washington, D.C. on Friday.
That's actually the headline on Fox News right now. The top headline is an article about you, and it says the most hated man in D.C. I guess my question would be, this was a foregone conclusion. It was going to pass. Why do it in this instance and not save your powder for later on something that you might be able to significantly actually hold up? Because this was going to pass regardless. And, you know, based on at least what people said in the media about you, it looks like you angered a lot of people in your own party, which may make it difficult for you to find an ally when you're trying to get something passed that helps your district in the future.
Well, you know, I'll take my constituents as my allies,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't betray them, and I couldn't betray my oath to the Constitution. And just getting back to the strategy here, people are saying, why did you light yourself on fire Friday? You know, that wasn't much of a plan.
Right.
Well, let me tell you the plan, Nancy Pelosi's plan, is that this third virus bill was a down payment, and that she has a fourth bill that's practically already written,
right,
that has all of the stuff she couldn't get in this bill, and then a lot of stuff you can't even dream about.
Right.
And so when she brings that to the floor, maybe it's a week from now, maybe it's a month from now, more people are going to be sick with the virus. More congressmen are going to be sick with the virus. There'll be greater restrictions on travel. And if somebody stands and objects to the fourth bill, if nobody had objected to the third bill, they would say, you don't have a leg to stand on.
Right.
Why didn't, you know, we've already done this. We've set a precedent. We've already agreed that it's okay for people to stay home and violate the Constitution, and Nancy Pelosi can pass the bill without us here, so sit down and shut up and stay home.
Right.
That's what would have happened on this fourth bill.
Well, they're going
to, instead, Leland,
now they'll have
instead,
to plan for it.
Yes, instead, they sent out an email that says all members will be notified in advance, so they will have time to come to Washington, D.C. for this next bill.
Wow. Why doesn't Congress have a way to conduct business remotely? Like, this is the one thing that I thought of in all of this was, you know, agree or disagree with what you did. every company in the country. I just had a business meeting the other day on Zoom. Why hasn't Congress thought about, hey, you know, if ever there's a pandemic and we all need to stay home, or a nuclear attack and everybody has to stay somewhere else, why don't they have a way to do this electronically and remotely?
This should make you question the government's continuity of government plan.
Right.
There's clearly, if they don't even have a plan for Congress voting remotely, what is the plan in an emergency? I don't think it involves Congress. If they haven't even thought through this part of it, right?
Right.
We're not even, and we've seen this coming, right? The doctors have got the models, and they say it's going to get worse, and it's going to get worse and worse. We saw this coming. Why would you, to your point, why would you want Congress, the only branch of government that can spend money, to be stuck at home and not even able to do anything?
Right.
There should be a plan for this. So first of all, let me just say, I believe without changing any House rules or without passing legislation, I think we can have hearings right now via teleconference on this virus, on the economics of some of these plans that have been implemented. We should have economists and doctors and epidemiologists, and when they have different models, they need to come and defend their models in the same room with both those doctors. We should be doing that right now remotely. It doesn't take a change in anything, as far as I can tell. We do field hearings all the time. Now, remote voting. Let me tell you why Pelosi doesn't want it, and let me tell you why Kevin McCarthy doesn't want it.
Okay.
See if you can twist my arm through this phone line, Leland. Like
I'm trying.
You and I are connected, and we're communicating, but I'm not feeling, I mean, unless you got a voodoo doll, why don't you get a little voodoo doll and twist the arm on it?
Right.
You can't twist my arm through this phone.
Yeah, but I could, let's say I was let's say I was the whip leader or whatever. I could threaten you. I could say, Massey, if you want anything to happen in your district, you need to vote the way we want you to.
You know what? You can't threaten me if I don't take your call.
Yeah, and you could also be recording it.
Yeah, right.
Which, if I come up to you in the hallway, you might not be quick enough to record it, but you might be recording a McCarthy call or something like that. Not that he would do that, but I'm just saying.
See, a lot of this happens in real time, face to face, the arm twisting and the threats and the bribes.
Right.
Like you're pointing out, because you can't record the threats and the bribes, like they do those face to face on the floor of the House of Representatives.
Right.
They also are separating you from your staff. Mm. And the staff is where a lot of the repository of the knowledge about what's in a bill resides, right?
Right.
It's the staff who are reading these bills and digesting them for the most part and trying to translate them for the congressman. So when you get on the floor of the House, unless you're leadership, you're not allowed to bring a staffer on the floor.
Right.
Okay. So now you go on the floor and you have to show up. So when the whip team calls my office, we don't have to take the call, right?
Right.
And a lot of times, if they're trying to whip my staff, which they do, it's not just congressmen whipping congressmen. They get down and try to whip your staff.
Right.
And my staff is not obligated to take their call or to speak for them to them for very long. But you always have that option of not taking the phone call unless you're on the floor of the House. See, what they do is three-quarters of the stuff we vote on isn't that consequential. And the vote is to get you to show up so that they can then twist your arm.
Right.
Okay, so that's reason number one why they don't want to do remote voting, why the leadership doesn't want to do remote voting. Here's reason number two. The assumption, if you're doing remote voting, is that you're recording the vote.
Right.
Right? How would you do a voice vote remotely? Like whoever can yell in their phone the loudest?
Yeah.
Like I'd put an amplifier on mine, right?
Yeah.
No, the implication in a remote vote is that you would actually want to record the vote.
Right.
So now, what's their excuse for doing a unanimous consent? What's their excuse for doing a voice vote if it's easy enough to, like, you know, tell Thomas Massey in this 30-minute window, you need to get to your phone or a computer or and register your yay or nay.
Right.
And we'll tally them here in Washington, D.C. We'll put them on the screen. You look at the screen, make sure that's the way you voted. Right. Election security is not that hard when it's not an anonymous vote.
Right.
Right. When it's a recorded vote, you can just look at the result and say, yeah, that's what I did.
Right. So in essence, they could have avoided what you did, but they don't want to because that would have forced them to be all on the record.
Well, they could have avoided coming to they could have avoided traveling. Yes.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, because the big complaint was that you were exposing your colleagues unnecessarily to this virus, and they could have avoided that, but in doing so, they would have given you what you wanted, and that was everybody would have had to go on the record, and it still would have passed.
There's a congresswoman who presumably has the virus. The news is reporting it.
Yes.
And they're asking me for a comment.
Oh, is that your fault?
Yeah, they're trying to say either she got it because of me, but because of the incubation time, I think what they're trying to say is she already had it.
Right.
And I had compelled her to come and give it to other members of Congress.
Gotcha.
Here's the problem with their narrative. And I had this discussion with Nancy Pelosi and Kevin McCarthy. I mean, the three of us right there on the floor talking. I said, I'm going to request a recorded vote. And then if you don't allow the recorded vote, by the way, in 7.5 years, they've never denied a recorded vote request. And I just know that because I've been in Congress for 7.5 years. I don't know how many years you'd have to go back, maybe decades, to see when somebody was ever denied a recorded vote request. But that was their intention. Then I said, okay, if you deny my recorded vote request, I'm going to note the absence of a quorum. Because, by the way, at the time, there wasn't a quorum in the room. Now, there was a quorum probably in D.C., and people could come into the room.
Right.
And they're saying, you're going to endanger all of your colleagues by requiring them to come in the room to produce a quorum. I said, no, you are. Because if you allow the recorded vote, a quorum doesn't have to be here all at the same time. They could come in one at a time and vote.
Right.
And they actually even had sent emails around for how we would vote in this scenario. They said we would have no more than 30 in the room at a time. We would, and this happens normally anyway. People walk in, vote, and walk back out and do an interview, a TV interview, right?
Yeah.
You don't, or if it's, we call it one and done. If there's only one vote, you show up and vote and you leave.
Right.
And so a lot of times when they do a one and done vote, there's never more than 30 people on the floor. So sorry to go into this for so long, but what I'm trying to say is it was Kevin McCarthy and Nancy Pelosi who, in denying the recorded vote, forced the quorum call.
Okay.
They wanted to blame me, but all they had to do was allow the recorded vote, and you wouldn't ever really even had to have more than a couple members in there.
Right.
At the same time.
Right. Okay, before I let you go, because I know you got other things to get on to here, you got a call from the president. He wasn't very happy. How did that go?
I was basically in listen-only mode, it felt like. Which, I mean, he was upset because he had been a misunderstanding of the situation. He thought, like some of your listeners thought, that what I was doing was going to delay the vote. And they were on Fox News saying that a delay, you know, was going to be bad and that Thomas Massie was going to crash the stock market. Now, if you believed the fake news, then you would be mad at me. I can see that.
Right.
But the fake news is fake and he knows it. And
right.
Even Fox gets it wrong sometimes.
Did he? Because he called you a third rate or something. I don't know. And you said you were at least second rate.
Third rate grandstander.
Okay.
And I took great offense. That was a tweet. That wasn't in person. But
yeah.
After our phone call, he tweeted that I was a third rate grandstander. I said I took great offense at that. I believe I'm at least second rate. My wife said, like, well, if you're a first rate statesman, is it an insult to be called a third-rate grandstander? Speaking of grandstanding, there was a four-hour debate. Okay. Most debates are only 2 hours in the House, by the way.
Right.
They wanted to give everybody a chance to grandstand.
Right.
And if you watch C-SPAN, there were people right after one after another get up and talk. And I went to the leadership and I said, okay, when do I get to speak? Because there was like an hour left, and I realized it didn't look like I was going to get to speak. And they said, well, you're at the top of the wait list. And I said, what do you mean? And they said, well, all these other members expressed an interest in speaking on this bill before you did. And I thought, what in the hell? They're all here because I told them to come to work. Right? And how ridiculous is that? So they never gave me a minute to speak on right. the substance of the bill in the four-hour debate, which the debate didn't need to be 4 hours. They made it be 4 hours. Some people got up and gave speeches that most of the speeches went something like this. There's bad stuff in the bill and there's good stuff in the bill.
Right.
And you can ultimately never know how they voted because it ultimately was a voice vote at the end of the day.
Wow.
So the one thing that I accomplished was I made them come to work. The right. one thing I couldn't accomplish was making them work.
So did the president ever listen to your explanation, and are you and him back on good terms, or is he still mad at you?
I left a message. I think he was actually busy, genuinely busy. I tried calling him up after the whole thing went down.
Yeah.
To smooth things over and to point out that, hey, look, I got what I needed. I strengthened your hand because now Pelosi doesn't have a precedent where everybody stays home and she gets to pass bills in the House.
Right.
By the way, let me tell you, people are probably listening saying, well, yeah, she can pass it, but it won't pass the Senate. You know, and the president doesn't have to sign it.
Right.
But that's not how it works in Washington. What happens is people start saying, we need more, we need something done. And then Pelosi, if she's the first mover, and she puts a bill out there and passes it in the House, and the Senate and the president haven't done anything.
Then they look like they're holding it up.
It looks like they're holding it up, and
right.
she's got the original draft of the bill.
Right.
They have to amend her bill.
Right. Right. That makes sense. All right. Last thing before I let you go, you mentioned earlier that the next time she does part two, that there'll be a lot stronger restrictions. Do you know something we don't know? The president's talking about hopefully end of April, we can start to reopen business. I don't know how much longer than that our economy can stay alive and with it our country. How long do you think we're in for?
You said you don't think it can survive much longer than that. I don't think it survives that.
Right.
I think this is a wound to our economy that will take 10 years to work its way out.
I agree.
And what we need look, I had a doctor, I'm just going to tell you, a doctor on a conference call with the GOP conference, his last name's Gottlieb, he said, this is going to be with us all summer, mm-hmm. that it may go quiescent in July and August, because the flu often does.
Right.
And then in September, it's going to come back. So, like, it depends on which doctor you listen to and which one you believe, but there are doctors talking to congressmen who are saying, this is going to be with us, we're going to have some form of these shutdowns for a year until the vaccine happens.
Right.
Now, maybe not continuous.
But the economy can't sputter and start and stop like that, though.
You can't do this. We've got to figure out smarter ways of dealing with it.
Well, the smart way to deal with it is to have broad-based testing and antibody
yes.
testing so that we know
yes.
who's immune to it. And then once that's done, let the younger
yes.
people back to work and then keep the older people at home until we have a vaccine or therapeutics.
Yes. And instead of locking people in their homes at the point of a gun, tell them if you want to walk around, wear a face mask.
Right.
Right? Like, there's some common sense things we can do.
Right.
Wear a face mask.
Right.
Okay? But instead, you've got the media, and you got even some of the White House messaging is, well, face masks won't work unless you're a doctor or a nurse.
Right.
Horse pucky. There's, I mean, this treat us not like kindergartners, right?
Right.
Treat us like adults and say, face masks are scarce right now. And so we need to make sure that the doctors and nurses and first responders have face masks.
Right.
But when they are no longer scarce, which will take a few weeks in a free market economy, if the FDA and the OSHA and all that's not stuck on stupid, then at that point, we should do like Japan, where I posted a webcam of a street in Tokyo, right? Live webcam streaming. People walking up and down the street, them shut their country down, and about 30 or 40% of them are wearing face masks.
Right.
Now, that's cultural for them.
Sure.
I don't mean a mask that covers your whole face. I mean, like the N95 yeah. respirator. By the way, it's called the N95 because it's 95%. It stops. And if you don't get a tight fit, you're wearing an N80, okay?
Right.
Or an N50, right? Don't tell me it doesn't do anything for you,
right.
okay? And we've all been talking to somebody, and somebody's talking, and you feel that little piece of spit hit your face, and you're like, man, I think that was spit from them, right?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter how tight your mask is on, you're going to at least be able to stop that little piece of spit.
Yep.
Anyways, these are the things that we should do. The widespread testing, the antibody antigen testing, the face mask for anybody that hasn't shown that they've got the antibodies.
Right.
Right?
Right.
But once you're one of those antibody people,
you're good to go.
You get to visit grandma in the nursing home. You get to go around without the face mask.
Yeah.
You get to go eat at the restaurant. You get to serve at the restaurant, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it feels like that. One other thing, too, is I'm noticing that the private sector is saving us. You know, for all the things that the liberals talked about, turn to government for this, that, and the
yeah.
other. And, you know, we had the MyPillow guy at the White House yesterday talking about how he's repurposed his factory to build masks or to make masks. Ford and Tesla and GM all working together with GE to build respirators. The private sector is going to save us.
Yep. Agreed.
Yeah.
And so don't shut it down. Don't nationalize it. Oh, my gosh. If you
yeah.
want something to slow down, let the government take over it.
Right. Exactly.
Like, it's unfortunately, the president suggested that. But he was mad at Ford and GM, I think, 5 minutes after he tweeted against me.
Right.
By the way, I'll just, yeah, I think he was having a bad day because the news was on there saying the market's going to crash,
right.
blah, blah, blah. I will just point out that one of my best friends just became Trump's chief of staff.
Oh, really?
Mark Meadows.
Yeah,
like yesterday.
Wow.
Which, why couldn't it have been day before yesterday?
Well, maybe that call will go through next time.
Well, and I can always contact Mark Meadows, and I have.
Yeah.
Since this event happened. And
yeah.
he's a good guy.
Yeah.
And I think he'll serve the president well. But I want to remind people, the president told Mark Meadows he was coming after him when Mark Meadows didn't vote for the health care bill.
Oh, that's true. I forgot about that.
And the Trump said the Freedom Caucus was dangerous or something to the United States, and that he was going to come after them. He was going to come after Mark Meadows. And Mark Meadows is now his chief of staff.
Yeah.
So it's like the tweet is not the end of a relationship with this president.
No, I think, and I don't think he's.
Sometimes it's the beginning of a great relationship.
Well, I think he's not ideological. I think he respects results. And so in the moment, if the results he's looking for aren't coming his way, he gets angry. But at the end of the day, he respects results. So if that's ultimately what you produce, then he's going to be in your corner. So I know I've gone along with you here, but I wanted to give you a chance to explain this, you know, to people. And thank you for taking the time to do it. I know you're super busy. Stay safe, and we appreciate you coming on the Disruption Zone again.
Leland, thanks for letting me use your program to talk to the people directly. It's so hard getting through the mainstream media, so your podcast is so important. Thanks for doing this. I look forward to all the feedback we get from it.
Yeah, and my pleasure. It's always welcome to come here and explain or discuss or talk directly to the people. Thanks again for your time, Congressman Thomas Massie. All right, I've just been inundated with tweets and texts from people going, why did Congressman Massie do what he did? And I didn't answer. I didn't mention it because I knew there had to be maybe more to the story, and I just thought, why tweet about this? And before I know what the full information is, now you can take what he said and say you agree or disagree with him. But I wanted him to have an opportunity to explain it directly to you, and then you can take the information that he gave you without being interrupted and without being edited and without having those words twisted and without an agenda. It's just him talking to you about why he made the moves that he made. And hopefully that helps you understand. And look, that's what I'm here for in this case, is to try to get this information out to you. And the best thing you can do for me in terms of helping spread the word and the message is to share this podcast. It is free to subscribe, and it's available on iHeartRadio's app. It's available on Apple Podcasts, on Google Play, on Spreaker, wherever podcasts are found. Share this podcast, and of course, from our website direct at thedisruptionzone.com. And the more people that will listen and download this podcast every day, the more our message spreads and the more powerful our voice, yours and mine, becomes. So please help in that manner. Thanks to our co-executive producer, Cameron Mills, to Dynamics Productions for their help with audio for the production of this program. It's dxaudio.com. We appreciate Joey Police and his work on the website at thedisruptionzone.com. And if you want to download it, you can just, like I said, go to those different places like iHeartRadio app or Apple Podcasts or Google Play. We're on Instagram. It's at The Disruption Zone on Instagram, and I am at Great Lelando. And on Twitter, it's at Zone Disruption and at Leland Show. So check it out. I'm Leland Conway, The Disruption Zone.